Hello again, and welcome to The Approach. This podcast explores ideas from Carleton University's Faculty of Arts and Social Sciences. My name is Philip Primo. I'm an instructor in the Department of Sociology and Anthropology and your host and guide for this podcast series. Each episode features a unique conversation with a different person from across the faculty's many departments, programs, and institutions. Different people, different approaches, one big academic community. This series not only showcases the work that goes on at Carleton, but also how a degree in the arts and social sciences can help you approach the ideas that matter most to you. On this episode, we'll be chatting Peter Thompson.
My name is Peter Thompson. I'm the Associate Dean Academic in the Faculty of Arts and Social Sciences at Carleton, and my regular faculty appointment is in the School of Indigenous and Canadian Studies.
Professor Thompson is also the author of the book Nights Below Ford Street, which explores how the coal mining industry is depicted in Nova Scotian literature and popular culture. We spoke to him about his book, his experiences as a Carleton student turned Carleton Associate Dean, and believe it or not, the hit television show Trailer Park Boys. Welcome, Peter. What's your connection to the coal mining industry in Nova Scotia?
So I grew up in a place called Stellarton, which is in Nova Scotia, and Stellarton is in Pictou County, which is very close to the ferry crossing. That's how I always locate myself when people ask me where I'm from. But Stellarton is a little bit further inland, so it's a coal mining region, and so it's a little bit different than the landscapes that you would normally associate with Nova Scotia, and so when I was in high school, I guess, or maybe junior high, there was a bunch of stuff that happened, but prior to me being in junior high, there was the Western Mine disaster, which took place really close to where I grew up. And there was an immediate move to kind of move away from resource extraction as the primary, conventional mining as the primary economic driver of the region. And what ended up happening is that because there was still coal in the ground, they brought in a strip mine. And so the interesting thing about the town that I grew up in is it's a nice little town. There's about 2,000 people, but right in the middle of the town, there's a huge strip mine. So climate change and resource extraction, really impacted the way that I grew up because, you know, a lot of the discourse in town was about, the impacts of the coal on the air that we were breathing. People were worried about their laundry in the backyard getting covered in coal dust, which of course it did. There's pictures of my hometown of, people who lived near the strip mine, and the mining company bought up a lot of the houses around there. But then there's people that held out, and so that you can see the mine really kind of encroaching, into their backyard and stuff like that. So it's still there. There's still a huge pile of coal right in the middle of my hometown. So when I go home, it kind of dominates the landscape. So it's always very present.
Based on your personal experience, do you think that proximity to the effects of climate change make a difference in how someone thinks about climate change?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, so it's one of the things, it's one of the kind of problems, I guess, we deal with in Canadian studies or, thinking about Canadian literature, Canadian popular culture, is because Canada is so big, it has this vast space, and in the popular imagination, Canada is pristine and clean and has these beautiful landscapes. We're conditioned to think that that's what Canada looks like, but then the places that we don't want to think about, so say the tar sands or, my hometown might be a place like my hometown's beautiful, don't get me wrong, but, these places that are impacted by resource extraction, we think of Chemical Valley and or places like Sudbury, like all these places that are sort of outside of, maybe where the majority of Canadians, either live or the places that we think about when we think about what Canada might look like, you know, I think there is a problem there. So that idea of proximity is really important because, you know, so much of our culture is about pushing the impacts of climate change out of sight, you know, so that we don't have to see it, we don't have to deal with it. But that doesn't mean that it's not happening. And in Canada, of course, you know, this is true in Nova Scotia, it's true across the entire country. You know, these things happen on racial lines as well. So, you know, the impacts of climate change are felt by Indigenous communities in ways that, you know, places like Ottawa may not experience them. And I think that's true throughout Canada, right? There's a disconnect between, you know, what scholars would call the metropolis and the hinterland, you know, where a lot of this, the sort of impacts of resource extraction take place outside of the city, but the city's the beneficiary of it. So, you know, when you think of Ottawa, you know, Ottawa's incredibly livable, you know, beautiful city with lots of green space. But you don't have to travel very far outside of Ottawa to see places that are, you know, really impacted by, you know, the logging industry and other forms of resource extraction.
So how do people really reconcile the negative effects of coal environmentally with the sort of necessity of coal financially when it comes to their livelihoods?
Yeah, I mean, really, it's a really good question. And it's really what kind of gets at the heart of my research, because on the one hand, you're right. You know, we're very aware of the problems environmentally with coal. And it goes beyond the environmental problems. It speaks to, you know, things like, you know, the history of labor violence within coal mining, you know, kind of gender problems in coal mining towns, dependence on coal mining industry by those communities. You know, certainly in the North American context, we can think about the role of coal mines in sort of authenticating a sense of settler belonging. So, you know, extending settler society. You know, so all these things are very much a part of the story of the coal mining industry in North America. Personal injury is another part of it as well. So there's all these kind of dark elements of coal mining. And then on the sort of extreme other side, we see this kind of, you know, fetishization of coal as like, you know, like the story of like, you know, manly men kind of extending the nation and contributing to the war effort. Like often you see kind of a connection between, you know, metaphors about war and the coal mining industry kind of go hand in hand. And of course the coal mining industry was key to the war effort as well. So there, and we often also see coal itself as a kind of fetish object. And if you think about Trump, I mean, you know, Trump, in a lot of his speeches, he talked about big, beautiful coal. And so there's this kind of, you know, valorization of the romanticization of the coal industry. So there's these two extremes.
So I have to say, I was quite struck by a chapter in your book that talks about race and climate change in a way that I wasn't really expecting it to. So I want to ask, what's the relationship between coal and the TV series Trailer Park Boys?
So it's a really good question. In the book, I'm talking about post-industrial Nova Scotia and the way that certain bodies and certain people are impacted by the history of resource extraction. So Trailer Park Boys takes place in suburban Halifax, which is, you know, outside of the kind of industrial belt that I really was talking about in the book. But the impacts of kind of, you know, working class culture and a sense of maybe being left behind and a shift that takes place that, that impacts, you know, certain parts of the population, I think is really present in Trailer Park Boys as well. So of course, you know, Trailer Park Boys takes place in a non-coal mining, you know, part of the province. But I think a lot of the ideas about working class culture still apply. And this idea of, you know, moving past a certain type of work into another version. So if we think about this shift from industrial work to post-industrial, the knowledge economy, all these things, and the types of people that are maybe left behind in that shift, I think Trailer Park Boys does engage with that idea as well.
Peter, could you tell us a little bit about the Carlton Climate Commons?
Yeah, so climate change is really emerging as a big research and pedagogical focus in FAS and at Carlton generally. I've been involved in the Carlton Climate Commons for quite a while. It's an initiative that was developed out of the English department. And it's a place for faculty and students who are interested in issues around climate change to come together. And it was really developed, thinking about what the humanities could contribute to thinking about climate change. And so a lot of things have developed out of that. We have a minor in environmental and climate humanities that's kind of loosely grown out of the climate commons. And then now Carlton is developing a collaborative MA that is really interesting. It has all the faculties that are involved in it, where students can learn about climate change. So there's a lot of stuff happening on climate change at Carlton. It's a really interesting time to be doing that type of work.
Why is it so important to have climate change research coming from not just the sciences, like hard sciences, but also from fields like English and the humanities and the social sciences?
So my research looks at representations of sort of post-industrial spaces in Nova Scotia, in Atlantic Canada generally, and then also in Appalachia. So I look at kind of places that had a lot of resource extraction and how they transitioned out of those economies and kind of what's left over. And so the humanities and English, English literature and popular culture have a lot to say about climate change, of course. It's a major preoccupation of artists, of scholars, of activists who are engaged in these types of ways of thinking. And one of the key things I think that's important to think about when it comes to humanities research and climate change is thinking about how we tell the story of climate change. So how we represent it, how we understand it, how we make it, communicable to people, that maybe their lives have to change or that, the things around them are changing or whatever. Because, a lot of times what happens with scientific, we're beaten over the head with these scientific reports. There's always a new scientific report and they're compelling and obviously convincing, the question is, why hasn't it taken hold in terms of, maybe political action around climate change or personal, people changing their lifestyles, those types of things. So thinking about the stories of climate change, I think is a really important part of what the humanities can contribute.
Okay, so I think we both have something in common, which is that we both completed our PhDs at Carleton. As a prospective student, what drew you to apply to Carleton University?
So I came to Carleton to do a degree in Canadian Studies, as it was called at the time. So it was in the School of Canadian Studies. It's now the School of Indigenous and Canadian Studies. And the thing that really attracted me to Carleton was the emphasis on interdisciplinarity. And it's really, really what I thought was really interesting about the program and the opportunity to study, literature and popular culture from a very interdisciplinary standpoint. And really, I think, this is one of the really big benefits of working at Carleton is, interdisciplinarity is really in the DNA of Carleton. We see people that have cross appointments, people working across faculties, across units. And I think that's a really it's a unique thing about Carleton, and it's something that's really important, I think. And it leads to really interesting programs. It leads to really interesting forms of research as well. So that's something that I think is unique and valuable about Carleton, is the kind of emphasis on interdisciplinary.
In addition to being Carleton alumni and professor, Peter, you're also the Associate Dean Academic in the Faculty of Arts and Social Sciences. So as someone who's very familiar with the university landscape, do you have any advice for students?
The best advice I ever got, I think, was not to worry so much, not to not think about it, but you know, not be bogged down in questions about, you know, what's this going to lead to, you know, what sort of job is this going to lead to. I think that's an important, it's important to consider the types of skills that you want to have as you're going into your professional life. I think that's important. But I really fundamentally believe that when students find something that they're passionate about, and that's the nice thing about a liberal arts degree, is that it exposes you to so many different ways of looking at the world. And you can figure out kind of, you know, I'm really interested in how the mind works, or I'm really interested in how literature responds to political changes, you know, or, you know, I'm interested in history, whatever it is, you know, whatever really ignites that passion. I think once you find that and you start to excel at it, then the other part will take care of itself. It really is important to expose yourself to different things and to really find the thing that is important for you.
Once again, thank you for listening. If you want to learn more about Carleton's Faculty of Arts and Social Sciences, check us out on the web at www.carleton.ca/FASS, on Twitter at CU_FASS, and we're on Instagram at Carleton University FASS, all one word. You can find more episodes of The Approach wherever you listen to podcasts, and check out the show notes for links to episode transcripts. Until next time, take care.